The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Are you a clinic owner searching for something new this year? Do you have unhappy clients with a mystery illness the doctors can't treat? Then it's time to try out our latest professional systems. My name is Kevin Davis. With our bioresonance system, we start with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments to strengthen, meridian stimulation, pathogen discovery, session guides, lifetime support, and a lot more. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, MPs fear the stigma of mental health and GP appointments for mental health support increase. These stories and more coming up. I'll be introducing you to Panita Singh, who will share her mental health thoughts. And we'll also look at the problem of gambling in relation to mental health. Music on the way from Christopher Cross and Peter Starstedt, and wise words to reflect on. So if good mental health matters to you, then this is a show not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Welcome to the show this week. You're tuned into UK Health Radio, your feel-good station. Plenty to talk about this week, so why don't we crack on with the stories making the headlines. The sister of the fashion designer Kate Spade, who was found dead earlier this month after an apparent suicide, said the 55-year-old had resisted seeking mental health treatment as she was worried it could damage her brand. Rita Sappho, Spade's older sister, has suggested she reportedly rejected family support to attend an inpatient clinic to treat what was described by Sappho as a prolonged manic depression. Adding that she'd offered to go with her sister, Sappho continued, "We get so close to packing her bags, but in the end, the image of her brand was more important for her to keep up." 6 in 10 MPs would fear the potential stigma of disclosing their own battles with mental health to the public, a survey has revealed. The study carried out by the Royal College of Occupational Therapists as part of Mental Health Awareness Week also showed 80% of parliamentarians had either suffered mental ill health themselves or supported a family member through difficulties. More than 60 MPs, peers and common staff members took part in the anonymous survey held in Parliament, which also asked them to list the things they have had to give up to pursue a career in politics. Also in the news, psychotherapists are offering free counselling to EU citizens living in the UK whose mental health has been adversely affected by Brexit. The scheme was launched in a bid to tackle the current climate of uncertainty and insecurity that has arisen as a result of the vote to leave the European Union in the 2016 referendum. Those interested in taking part will be offered up to 10 free sessions conducted either online or over the phone with an accredited psychotherapist affiliated with the Existential Academy, the community interest company behind the scheme. Academics believe adults are still emotionally traumatised by the referendum result, with many using the words devastated, ashamed and depressed to describe their current psychological status. Finally in the news, GPs in the UK reveal that almost half of their appointments now involve mental health concerns. 66% of doctors say the number of patients they see for mental health has dramatically increased in the last 12 months. As a result of the findings, mental health charity Mind is now calling for a better mental health training scheme for GPs, with the support of 4 out of 5 doctors who agree there should be a wider range of options available to patients. In an open letter to Health Education England, signed by the British Medical Association, the Royal College of GPs and other bodies, Mind is calling for GP training to be extended from 3 to 4 years to allow for more mental health training. It's also calling for urgent additional resources in the primary care workforce, including the placement of mental health therapists in GP surgeries. That's the news this week. You're listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison. You know, it's sad once again that we learn of another person in the public eye who has taken her own life following the prolonged struggles with a mental health issue. There's something in the news reports that I find both interesting and sad. Spade and her brand was described as happy-go-lucky. How many times do we hear this about people who've taken their own life? It's such a sad contradiction. As we know, Spade was found dead earlier in the month after an apparent suicide. Her sister even suggested her death was not unexpected. Wow, what a sad position to be in, knowing that a family suicide was not unexpected. Her sister continued, "She was always a very excitable little girl, and I felt all the stress and pressure of her brand may have flipped the switch where she eventually became a full-on manic depressive. She was definitely worried about what people would say if they found out." If I remember correctly, I believe a single suicide directly affects 20 people. Marjorie Wallace, chief executive of mental health charity Sane, said Spain's death shows yet again how mental illness can destroy people's lives and is no respecter of celebrity, wealth or success. She goes on to say, "It also highlights the importance of talking openly, accepting help and not being afraid that it might affect your reputation. I just want to take a moment to consider how it must feel to be affected by mental health and to be tormented by the fear of it affecting your brand. That's got to be a double blow. I imagine it must have been a self-perpetuating issue, whereby you work hard to maintain brand image, but that casts doubt in your mind, so you work harder to try and mask the problem. In a situation like that, you are never going to win unless you make some drastic changes. I can't shake the feeling of sadness here. Kate Spade genuinely, maybe passionately, believed her mental health was going to ruin her brand." Marjorie Wallace continues, "While people with mental illness often think they'll be rejected, our most recent survey shows that overwhelmingly people are prepared to accept and understand. And here's the rub. Maybe, just maybe, people could have accepted Spade's position. Whilst I was aware of Kate Spade's brand, I wouldn't suggest for 1 minute I was part of her target audience. But doing a little research, I found a tribute page where people shared their memories of their first purchase. Her products are highly aspirational, and when people look back, there's a real sense of warmth. Let me share a few of those comments. The first gift I bought the love of my life was a Kate Spade bag, and I remember inside there was a card with the quote, 'She leaves a little sparkle wherever she goes.' It encapsulated the girl I love perfectly. She had a way of encapsulating magnificent. My thoughts are with her family." And another one said, "When I first got a job with a livable wage, one of my first purchases was a Kate Spade. I was so proud that I could buy something for myself that was better quality and more of an investment than bags I've been carrying. Her death is so sad." And this one is particularly poignant. Simply goes, "The bags have started so many conversations with strangers. She has brought colour, joy and friendship to my life." What a double-edged sword Spade's position was. Complete happiness for many and complete darkness for her. Here are some useful websites and helplines if you've been affected by this. Samaritans offers a listening service which is open 24 hours a day on 116 123. You can call free in UK and Ireland. You can also call Mind, open Monday to Friday 9 till 6 on 0300 123 3393. Get Connected is a free advice service for people under 25. Call 0808 808 4994 or email help@getconnected.org.uk. And Hopeline runs a confidential advice helpline if you are a young person at risk of suicide or worried about a young person at risk. Monday to Friday, 10 till 5 and 7 till 10 p.m. Weekends, 2 till 5 p.m. on 0800 068 4141. How do you feel about your MP? I tried to keep politics away from the show, but here's a news story that piqued my attention. 6 in 10 MPs would fear the potential stigma of disclosing their own battles with mental health to the public, a survey has revealed. At a time when promoting mental health issues is key, I would question why the people who are elected to run the country should feel ashamed of their own battles. What I do accept is what the MPs have to give up to do their job, notwithstanding a much higher than average wage. 4 in 10 MPs said they no longer had time to exercise, and a quarter said they were unable to spend time with family and friends. Other hobbies that had fallen by the wayside included gardening, dog walking, and visiting art galleries. And one individual said they had to give up basically everything outside of their job. Now that has to have an effect on your mental state. But why not be honest? We're part of a revolution right now, a notion that it's okay to talk about your mental battles. If the royals can speak up, then shouldn't the MPs be able to follow suit? Julia Scott, Royal College of Occupational Therapists chief executive, said, MPs have a vital role to play in reducing stigma and highlighting the valuable role that professions such as occupational therapists can play in better, more appropriate care for people. MPs were also asked to share activities they used to try and reduce stress, which included yoga, watching football, reading, going to the gym and drinking. Putting this into perspective, according to figures from the Health and Safety Executive, 12.5 million working days were lost last year due to work-related stress, depression or anxiety affecting 526,000 workers. And as I always point out, that's just the figure we know about. I question how many people are suffering with mental health challenges who are not coming forward or who are simply unaware. This is the Therapy Suite on UK Health Radio. I'm Duncan. Hello. If you have a mental health story to tell or would like to share information about your mental health project, you can do so by emailing me at duncan@thinkduncan.com. You'll also find me on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison. Still to come, music on the way from Christopher Cross with a song which was a signature tune for an 80s film starring Dudley Moore. We'll also be discussing gambling and mental health. I've got wise words on the way, and I'll take a look at what mental health campaigner and author Natasha Devon thinks you need to know about mental health. So keep it locked to UK Health Radio, your feel-good station. Brexit. It's the Marmite topic which can divide people's opinions. Out of all the topics of conversation, it's not one that I thought I'd be discussing on a mental health show. But recent studies reveal it's one of the new causes of serious mental health concern. So much is the demand for counselling to overcome these concerns that a new scheme has been launched specifically to address Brexit. So how do you feel? Is it a subject that is causing you worry and anxiety? Are you depressed at the thought of the outcome? If so, you can now get free counselling from the Emotional Support Service for Europeans. The service was launched this time last year and offers 10 sessions to tackle the current climate of uncertainty and insecurity as a result of the 2016 referendum. A lead psychiatric professor at Middlesex University who is leading the project said, "We set up this service when we became aware of the considerable distress that had been generated for EU citizens in the UK because of the Brexit referendum. Not only did they feel disenfranchised by not having been given the vote of their own, they also feel deeply threatened by the way in which they are becoming second-class citizens whose acquired rights are being restricted." You may not think people would cite Brexit as a mental health concern. According to the professor, though, there is huge demand. People are still feeling dazed, anxious and depressed and have no faith in the notion of settled status, which does not apply to everyone and still leads to a loss of acquired rights. And they go on to say, "We should think carefully about what is happening in the country, particularly when so many people's mental and emotional health is adversely affected by it." If you want to know more about this free counselling service, log on to www.existentialacademy.com/ESSE. That's www.existentialacademy.com/ESSE. Moving on. How has your experience been with your GP when discussing mental health? Did you feel they understood your concerns, or did you feel brushed aside with no positive resolve? It was revealed last week that 40% of GP appointments now involve mental health. This is quite a high number. But does this surprise you? In a survey of more than 1,000 GPs conducted by mental health charity Mind, results reveal that 2 in 3 GPs say proportion of patients needing help with their mental health has increased in the last 12 months. GPs also say that 2 in 5 of their appointments now involve mental health. As a result of the findings, Mind is now calling for better mental health training for GPs, with the support of 4 of 5 doctors who agree there should be a wider range of options. Currently, training for GPs is limited to 3 years, and just 1 of the 21 compulsory modules for trainees is specifically dedicated to mental health. Similarly, while trainees are given the option to undertake placements in mental health, it's often based in hospitals rather than community psychiatric services. In an open letter to Health Education England, signed by British Medical Association, the Royal College of GPs and other bodies, Mind is calling for GP training to be extended from 3 to 4 years to allow for more mental health training. It's also calling for urgent additional resources in the primary care workforce, including the placement of mental health therapists in GP surgeries. One GP, who's about to complete his training, said, offering training GPs more types of mental health placements would be invaluable. Now, you'd like to believe that your GP has the confidence to deal with mental health issues, but the outlook is that many feel underprepared to deal with such problems, and indeed the high volume of patients experiencing mental health concerns. The concern is not just about their ability to deal with the caseload, but crucially, ensuring GPs have the tools and ability to recognise their own mental health needs. Paul Farmer, Chief Executive of Mind, said GPs do a really difficult job. We know it can make a huge difference when our GP is knowledgeable and confident about mental health, or when we can find that a physical illness is affecting our mental health. You're listening to UK Health Radio, your station to find the most up-to-date and progressive ideas on the whole health spectrum. You can listen to any programme at any time and anywhere just by logging on to www.ukhealthradio.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Still to come, a song that jointly won the 1969 Ivor Novello Award for lyrics and music, and we'll take a look at the problems caused by gambling.
Once in your life you find her, someone who turns your heart around, and next thing you know, you're closing down the town. Wake up and it's still with you, even though you left your way across town, wondering to yourself, hey, what have I found? When you get caught between the moon and New York City, I know it's crazy,
I've asked you who Natasha Devon was, would you be able to answer? Maybe. Natasha is a big advocate of mental health here in the UK. She's a writer, a social critic. She travels schools and colleges throughout the UK, delivering classes and conducting research with teenagers, teachers and parents on mental health, body image and social equality. Last month, she published a new book called 7 Things You Need to Know About Being Mental. The first thing she says is we all have a head with a brain in it, which means we all have mental health. As a mental health campaigner with a track record of talking about her experience of anxiety and eating disorders, you'd be forgiven for assuming Natasha Devon would object to being called mental. But through her new book, A Beginner's Guide to Being Mental, the 37-year-old wants to reclaim the word, pointing out that every one of us is mental in a very literal sense. We all have a head with a brain in it, which means we all have mental health. It's just the same way as we have a body, so we've all got physical health, she tells HuffPost UK. It's hard to argue with her logic. So, what else does the author want us to know about being mental? She says mental health doesn't just affect 1 in 4 people. This number may be the go-to statistics when it comes to mental health, but Natasha is dubious. The figure is based on a household survey conducted by the NHS Digital in 2007, but subsequent NHS surveys have suggested the prevalence of mental health issues may be much higher. Natasha believes we need to move away from using stats to talk about mental health in this way altogether. We need to stop saying 1 in 4, she says. She goes on to say it would be ridiculous to say 1 in 4 people have a physical health problem. What does it even mean, she says. She believes we shouldn't be afraid of the diagnosis. Natasha began to experience what she now recognises as symptoms of anxiety disorder, including panic attacks around the age of 10, but didn't receive a diagnosis until she was 31. Now she spreads a message that the diagnosis is a good thing. It was a huge relief to me because in the interim period between 10 and 31, I developed lots of coping strategies, the most pronounced of which was my eating disorder that lasted for 7 years, she says. I just thought that I was less good at dealing with life than other people were. So suddenly, for this thing to be given a name and to understand that I couldn't manage it and there were steps I could take, made me feel I was back in control again. It was incredibly validating. Recovery is rarely down to one thing. A combination of lifestyle changes such as exercising, getting outside in the fresh air and healthy eating, alongside more formal treatments such as medication, helped Natasha to manage her anxiety. And she believes each are equally important. She takes sertraline daily, an antidepressant often prescribed for anxiety, but has also developed her own strategy to encourage herself to get out of the house when she wouldn't necessarily feel like she needs to do so. If I let my anxiety win, I would just end up staying in my house all day, she says, and I would never see anyone. So I have a process on days when I really don't want to go out where I bargain with myself. I talk myself through bit by bit, saying, just get up, just put your clothes on, just go to the front door, just walk to the end of the road. And then I normally find that actually talking to people once I'm out really helps to keep my anxiety in check. And this is very similar to what Deborah McCabe was saying about mindfulness in the last programme. Mental health workers and loved ones also need support too, she believes. Much of Natasha's work includes going into schools and talking to young people about mental health and their own concerns. Whether you're supporting a loved one struggling with a mental illness or working in the mental health sector, she recommends taking time to look after yourself. Mental illness is part of everyday life for many people. When celebrities talk about their experiences of mental health, it's often in retrospect, presented as something they've been through and overcome, Natasha argues. While she thinks this does go some way to help challenge the stigma, she'd like to see more people talking about their mental health in the present. She continues, we need to focus on prevention in a serious way. If kids are lucky, they might have an hour-long PSHE lesson on mental health, where a campaigner like Natasha is invited in to talk. But she'd like schools to go much further to ensure children's mental well-being can flourish throughout their school careers. We need to be thinking about getting more things that are conducive to good mental health into the school day, such as exercise, fresh air and quality food into the school canteen. We need to look at more funding for things like art and music and drama, which we know have a therapeutic value for people who are at all places on the mental health spectrum. Once we've nailed that system, it gives children the best possible chance of having good mental health in school. Natasha would also like to see that model rolled out in workplaces and society in general, looking at the ways that adults can live better lives. We need to make good mental health a priority day to day, she says, not just when we reach crisis point. Interesting views there that I think we all share. If you'd like to find out more about Natasha Devon, you can do by logging on to www.natashadevon.com. That's www.natashadevon.com. Moving on. The government has cut fixed odds betting terminal stakes to £2 to tackle gambling-related harm. As well as the more obvious effects gambling can have on your financial situation, it can also have a serious impact on your mental health. According to the Royal College of Psychiatrists, problem gamblers are more likely than others to suffer from low self-esteem, develop stress-related disorders, become anxious, have poor sleep and appetite, develop substance misuse, and suffer from depression. That's quite a list. If you enjoy gambling, it isn't always easy to tell where the line is between a hobby and a compulsion or addiction that has the potential to leave a person in debt, damage their relationships, and harm their mental health. UK addiction treatment centres have seen a 55% rise in the number of people with gambling addictions they've treated in the last year alone. In a bid to reduce the risk of gambling-related harm, the government has announced the amount people can stake on fixed odds betting terminals, FOBTs, will be slashed to £2. Currently, punters can place bets of up to £100 every 20 seconds. These machines are a social blight and prey on some of the most vulnerable in society, Culture Secretary Matt Hancock said when making the recent announcement. We are determined to put a stop to it and build a fairer society for all. But whether you spend time on the machines or place bets on the football, how can you tell if your gambling habit is becoming bad for your health? According to Catherine Sweet from the gambling addiction charity GamCare, for many people, gambling is not a harmful activity, but for some, it can become a serious problem. We believe it's important for people to properly understand the risks associated with gambling and for them to be able to access timely advice and support to prevent the problem developing. The charity says you may be developing a gambling addiction if you notice the following points. Your spending has become uncontrolled. You're concealing or lying about gambling behaviour. Gambling is impacting on relationships with family and friends. You're withdrawing from family activities. You're spending excessive amounts of time on a computer. You have no apparent interests or leisure pursuits. Or you take increasing absence from school, college, university, or work. Do any of those ring true for you? So how can you cut down on gambling? If you're starting to recognise some of the warning signs I've just shared, there are self-care tactics you can implement to try and cut down on gambling. GamCare recommends scheduling other activities at times you're most likely to gamble, plus writing your feelings down in a diary to keep track of how they change. If you're not gambling, note how you're feeling and how you've coped. And if you have gambled, think about the events that led up to it and record your feelings before, during, or after. You can also remove some of the temptations by blocking software for online gambling and implementing self-exclusions by banning yourself from certain betting shops you go to regularly. When you lose control of your gambling habits, this can lead to spending more than you can afford and feeling an overwhelming need to win the money back. However, in order to reduce the risk of falling into debt, the NHS says it's important to remember gambling is not a way to make money. Try to see it as an entertainment instead. The NHS website says it also recommends not taking credit cards with you when you go gambling and avoiding bottling up your feelings about gambling from loved ones. If you're finding it hard to stick to a routine and monitoring self-care strategies, it may be a sign you've developed an addiction and require professional help. According to the charity Mind, addiction is often linked to mental health problems. If you have an addiction problem, it may have started as a way to cope with feelings that you felt unable to deal with in other ways. Speak to your GP if you're concerned about gambling. They may refer you for cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT, to identify underlying triggers drawing you to gambling and help to work through them. GamCare also operates the National Gambling Helpline, providing information, advice and support for anyone affected by problem gambling. Advisors are always available 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to midnight on a free phone number, 0808 8020133, or via web chat at www.gamcare.org.uk. That phone number once again, 0808 8020133, or via the web chat at www.gamcare.org.uk. The charity offers a range of face-to-face and online treatments across England, Scotland and Wales, as well as a moderated forum where people can speak to others experiencing similar issues and seek support.
You talk like Marlene Dietrich, and you dance like Zizi Jarmet. Your clothes are all made by Balmain, and there's diamonds and pearls in your hair. Yes, there are. You live in a fancy apartment off the boulevard Saint-Michel, where you keep your Rolling Stones records and a friend of Sacha Distel. Yes, you do. But where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to look inside your head. Yes, I do. I've seen all your qualifications you got from the Sorbonne, and the painting you stole from Picasso. Your loveliness goes on and on, yes it does. When you go on your summer vacation, you go to Juan-les-Pins with your carefully designed topless swimsuit. You get an even suntan on your back and on your legs, and when the snow falls, you're found in Samoritz with the others of the jet set, and you sip your Napoleon brandy, but you never get your lips wet. No, you don't. But where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Won't you tell me the thoughts that surround you? I want to look inside your head, yes I do. Your name, it is heard in high places. You know the Aga Khan. He sent you a racehorse for Christmas, and you keep it just for fun, for a laugh. They say that when you get married, it'll be to a millionaire, but they don't realize where you came from, and I wonder if they really care or give a damn. Where do you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed? Tell me the thoughts that surround you. I want to look inside your head, yes I do. I remember the back streets of Naples, two children begging in the rags, both touched with a burning ambition to shake off their lowly bone tags. They try. So look into my face, Marie Claire, and remember just who you are. Then go and forget me forever, but I know you still bear the scar deep inside. Yes, you do. I know where you go to, my lovely, when you're alone in your bed. I know the thoughts that surround you, 'cause I can look inside your head. Na, 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 na.
plenty more on the way here at UK Health Radio. In the studio after me is the wonderful Leah Mattinson with the Master Your Life show. She'll be teaming up with writer and presenter Dr. Howard Ranking to provide inspiration, intelligence and insight that will help you master your life. So stay tuned for that. Whilst this station is called UK Health Radio, we have many listeners around the world who support us. And it's always a pleasure when people in far-flung places share their stories. This week is no exception. Panita Singh is a med school student and holistic healer, a natural high achiever. She's also a primary care and mental health advocate, a multiple trauma survivor.
Hi there. My name is Panita Singh. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you to Mr. Duncan for having me on his show today. I am a senior medical student currently on hiatus due to extenuating health circumstances. I suffer from both physical and mental health ailments. I am a multiple trauma survivor and have faced many near-death experiences over the past recent years. I would like to give you a glimpse into my world today. I do hope you find it insightful and most of all relatable. Since childhood, I have been a high achiever. Many say a perfectionist. I had a finger in one too many pies. I was and still am very goal-oriented, hard-working, and excelled in everything I put my mind to. However, I have always been an anxious and stressed person. Being a perfectionist has its downfalls, and because of that, I don't think I enjoyed my childhood. Apart from that, I was bullied in school from grade 4 till I graduated. The worst part was that my best friend became my worst bully. Till date, I'm not sure why she did that. But my therapist believes it might have been because she saw me as a rival and probably suffered from an inferiority complex. So I turned to my books for comfort because those were my only true companions throughout school. I wasn't invited to many parties, being the unpopular kid on the block, which hurt me deeply. But I seized that as an opportunity and invested my time into extracurricular activities, such as learning the keyboard, volunteering with different organizations, and being one of the brightest students of my school. Fortunately, during my undergraduate years, I made many wonderful friends, some of whom are still a part of my life. But over the years, my anxiety continued to worsen because I was still the same person, the high achiever with great self-expectations. I was officially diagnosed with generalized anxiety for the first time in 2009. I was also diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome, also known as IBS, around the same time. But now when I reflect back, I had been having gastrointestinal issues ever since I had been being bullied at school and focusing on my academics, which led to greater stress and anxiety. This is greatly significant because IBS is actually a dysfunction of the brain-gut nervous systems. In other words, stress and anxiety play a major role in the normal functioning of the gastrointestinal system. Then in 2012, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, a severe inflammatory bowel disease. That was also the year I started medical school and lived alone, away from my family and close friends for the first time in my life. Medical school as such is very challenging. However, it was more difficult for me because I was battling with a serious medical condition where I used to bleed rectally for hours, have high fevers and fainting spells amongst other serious symptoms. In 2013, I was officially diagnosed with clinical depression and was started on antidepressants and anxiolytics. I did not know who to turn to, especially with my support system, my family and close friends being oceans away. Sure, I had classmates and slowly forged few strong friendships in medical school, but at the end of the day, all of us faced the same pressures of medical school. We were stressed, depressed, and/or anxious. It was harder yet for me because of my physical chronic illnesses. And so my mental health worsened, being that mental health ailments are comorbidities of physical chronic illnesses. In 2015, I had a major car accident where I was T-boned by a drunk driver. I thought this was it. My time was up. Fortunately, I escaped with only a few bruises, but my car was totally wrecked. Since then, I've had post-traumatic stress disorder, also known as PTSD, and till date I find it difficult to get behind the wheel. After that incident, and along with the burden of my studies, my health continued to deteriorate. Some of my medical colleagues used to make fun of me about my health, about my accident, about my life in general. I don't know why they did that. Why did they find my misery so amusing? And these were students who were training to become empathetic physicians and yet could not help a fellow colleague in need. Once again, I was a victim of bullying that continued to worsen my depression and anxiety. My body could not take it anymore, and I crashed in June 2016 when I was rushed to the ER of the same hospital where I was completing my rotations. I was lucky that my professors who knew about my health conditions became my treating physicians, and I was looked after with exceptional care and warmth. However, I continued to have many hospitalizations, multiple infections and procedures, so much so that I needed to be transferred to a higher level of care, where I was finally diagnosed with many complicated and severe ailments, namely solitary rectal ulcer syndrome and pelvic outlet obstruction syndrome. I was informed that I had been misdiagnosed with ulcerative colitis in 2012 and thus had been receiving the wrong treatment, which had led to multiple infections, immense weight loss, and succumbing to other side effects of these high doses of immunosuppressants. I was bedridden for months. I had to undergo my first emergent surgery in July 2016, where a part of my large intestine was removed and an ileostomy bag was placed. I then underwent my second surgery in September 2016, which included reversal of the ileostomy and small bowel resection. After that, I moved back in with my parents to recover. However, in January 2017, I fell fatally ill again. I had to undergo multiple surgeries as my small bowel had perforated. I was minutes away from going into septic shock. I was in the ICU and my heart gave away. But someone somewhere, most probably my father, was praying very hard, and I was brought back to life literally. My family, our friends, my medical school professors all prayed and wished me well for my recovery. None of them could believe that all of this had happened to me. I was discharged almost after a month in the hospital. After that and till date, I'm fighting to pay my hospital bills. My insurance company is refusing to pay my surgery bills. I'm an unemployed, broke student who's still trying to pay my student loans, and I'm already in financial doldrums. I even had to visit many lawyers to help me with my accident case while struggling with my health issues, and they were of no help either. I was and am still trying to regain my health. But how is one supposed to do that when one is facing so many challenges? My mental health just continued to deteriorate. Since the first surgery, I had started to become bitter and resentful. I was angry at the universe, at God, as to why I had to suffer so much. I was always in pain and prayed that my life would end, or I wish I had the courage to take my life. The hospitalizations and the surgeries I underwent in 2017 were supposedly complications due to the first two surgeries that I'd undergone in 2016. Apparently, there were some surgical errors made. Different physicians then and now have different theories as to why I was misdiagnosed and suffered extensively as a consequence. Hearing all this did not help my mental state at all. But the only reason I want to live and get better is for my family. They continue to support me through my ups and downs and never lose hope or faith, even when I do. But because so much happened back to back, I continue to suffer from PTSD. I have flashbacks of experiences that I've undergone, nightmares, and sometimes I wake up screaming in the middle of the night, drenched in sweat with my heart pounding. I also undergo severe panic attacks where my throat constricts, making it difficult to breathe. My stomach contracts. I start throwing up, hysterically, and crying hysterically, and left in debilitating physical pain. I visited a psychiatrist who diagnosed me with severe PTSD, generalized anxiety disorder, and major depressive disorder. I was advised to continue my antidepressants that I had been prescribed in 2016. I started isolating myself from people and places that reminded me of my traumatic events. Apart from the PTSD and anxiety, I just don't have the energy to be around people, especially those who make insensitive comments about my health, such as, when will you be normal again? Or just get over it? Or how come you're still with your parents? As part of my recovery process, I met a world-renowned proctologist who said that a substantial part of my physical ailment was related to me being a victim of bullying in school. As a result of being bullied, my body's muscles, including my GI muscles, are always in a contracted state, a state that my body subconsciously took on as a defense mechanism to protect against my bullies. This is called the dog's tail syndrome, or in medical terms, puborectalis syndrome. It's basically a syndrome where one's sympathetic system, also known as the flight or fight system, is always turned on, even when there is no imminent threat. This physician actually hugged me because he saw how traumatized I had been since a child. He suggested a couple of things for me to do. First, I started seeing a physiotherapist to help me strengthen my pelvic floor muscles and retrain them to work the way they naturally should. Second, I was advised to see a psychotherapist to deal with my mental health ailments and the more deep-seated problems, the bullying incidents. Even though I was hesitant at first, I'm glad I did, because I learned and continue to learn a lot about myself, how to process and honor all my feelings, thoughts, and emotions, whether positive or negative. I slowly learned to calm my mind, and my PTSD and anxiety attacks decreased. Since I had been impacted on all levels, physical, emotional, and mental, I wanted to and continue to try to heal and grow holistically. I was making great progress until December 2017, when I had another personal shock. I had a falling out with an extremely close friend. Little did I realize that it would take a great toll on my health. I became more depressed, lost a lot of weight, could not eat for days, and became almost catatonic and bedridden. I started to have significant physical symptoms, so much so that I needed immediate medical attention once again. I underwent another series of invasive procedures and was on a baby food diet. Since then, my PTSD, insomnia, and anxiety attacks returned and are more severe than ever, to the extent that I become hysterical with grief, have multiple breakdowns, and feel lost and aimless. I started seeing another psychiatrist and my therapist regularly again. We're still trying to figure out a suitable treatment plan. They support me by saying that healing is not linear and that it is normal to have ups and downs. But I continue to feel worthless, suicidal at times, and feel that all my hard work on stabilizing my mental and physical health over the past many months went down the drain just because of one relationship. However, my parents made me realize that I could not let just one relationship break me. My father said, "What about all the other people who love and care for you deeply? Don't you want to live for them?" And so I continue to battle each day as it comes. It's not easy, because mental ailments can take you down dark paths, and only you can find a way back into the light. So I keep trying different coping strategies to help me. I support myself by saying, after all, I am only human. I'm still on my journey of healing.
More from Panita next week. This week's wise words are provided by the 32nd President of the United States, Franklin D. Roosevelt. He goes on to say, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." And I think that's a great passage to mull over this week. Don't forget, if you do have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well, keep smiling, see you next time.